listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolling.
And welcome to State of the Arts.
As always, brought to you by Breakdown Services. We're delighted to be here today. We have two in-studio guests today, which we always prefer. I always prefer that over the call-ins, don't you?
As I, yes.
Having the people here, being able to look at them, talk at them, I like it a lot more than the call-ins. We have Broadway and television star Linda Pearl with us. Linda, thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks
thank
for having
you,
me on
Linda.
Board.
Thank you, Linda. Lovely to see you.
We'll be talking to Linda about 10 minutes after the hour, and we also have Aurelien Rouland. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's correct.
I got that right, Michael.
You get
and
a little
French
gold star.
Is not my forte.
Well, I wouldn't imagine it would be. Italian, yes, but
yes,
not
it's
French,
yeah.
Right?
And Michael, you know better than I because you saw the production.
Yes.
Would you just describe Aurelien's credits?
Aurelien is director, producer, choreographer, star of Beyond, which is this amazing production at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood on the main stage.
Obviously the main stage, because it's
a
fairly grand production.
Yes, it is. And it's a cabaret production that is a little bit of Cirque. It's very French, certainly, and he does an amazing job. It's right kind of in your face, if you will, because of the size of the theater, 350 seats. And seeing something like this comparable to this on a bigger scale would be like seeing Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
But this actually is fascinating because it is right in front of you, and this amazing talent of what you have 14 members in your company, is that right?
Actually 17.
17.
Yeah, 17
okay.
Dancers and acrobats.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but
later in the hour,
so happy to have you in
you.
Studio. Thank you.
Thank
for
you
joining
both.
Us.
We're looking forward to it. And Linda also has something to tell us
she
about
does.
Later on the California International Theater Festival, which we're very excited about. Which just from looking at the promotional material, just looks like an absolute blast.
And Paul opened on your birthday.
Yes, opened
July
on
17th.
July 17th, and I'm delighted to say that I am 72 years old, Michael. I don't know.
But you don't look a day over 75.
But I still get a lot of compliments, which says something.
And our guest, Aurelien's birthday is tomorrow, so it's a little...
Yes,
yeah.
And he's...
Thank you. I make it special, right?
You're welcome. It'll be forever in the archives of this station here.
So how was your weekend?
You know, it started off a little crazy. My computer, which, you know, we all live by in this technical age, right, with a computer.
Right.
And my goodness, it crashed. It crashed early in the morning.
And with you, that's like losing a limb.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. As a publicist and someone in production, you live on this thing. And
right.
It crashed, and I had to take it to the doctor, if you will, and to see if it could be saved, which it was. They took me on a priority basis. I have a little cachet at the doctor's office.
I think that's showing your computer naivete right there, Michael. Don't bring your computer
to the doctor's office. But I was very grateful for this young man. I actually took it to Staples is where I took it. And he fixed me right up. And then I went to go in the car to run many errands. And I have a car, Linda, that is a state-of-the-art kind of the best-selling car in America, they tell me right now. It's a Fusion, a Ford Fusion. And it's the car that speaks to you.
Oh,
speaks to you
nice.
Frequently about various and assorted things.
Yeah.
And as I was pulling out of the driveway, this lovely English female voice says, low fuel.
Uh-huh.
So
not
I thought,
a good sign.
Not low fuel. Low air pressure.
Low air pressure. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And I said, low air pressure? What the heck? And I got out of the car, and I had a completely flat tire. Brent, I just bought the car 3 months ago. Right?
So it not only talks to you, but it's a very optimistic car.
Very optimistic.
It's a real glasses half full car.
That's right. That's
low
right.
tire pressure.
So that
idiot.
Was the way, the weekend started that way, but you had a weekend. You had a weekend of auditions.
Yes, I did.
For Seaglass Theater Company.
Our theater company.
New production.
Seaglass Theater. We're doing a production this fall of Grapes and Nuts. It's a parody of John Steinbeck. Mm-hmm. It's very, very funny. It's a hybrid of Mice and Men and Grapes of Wrath. And I actually was lucky enough to be in the original production 20 years ago in Chicago, and it was a huge...
When he was 55.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
I'm just a 55-year-old with a dream. And I think the show was supposed to run about 6 weeks. It ran 8 months. Mm-hmm. And just a little storefront theater in Chicago, and it was a huge hit. So when I presented it to the Seaglass people, they all happily chose it. It's a wonderful, wonderful play, and we had our auditions this weekend, and we got some great people. We're going to have callbacks coming up on Friday of this
now,
coming week.
Paul, let me ask you something. Now, on the board of Seaglass Theater is the wonderful James Denton from Desperate Housewives.
Jamie.
Your colleague. And does James sit in on these auditions?
He was going to. He actually got called away. He was all scheduled to, but he likes to really be an integral part of what we do there.
Right.
And, you know, Jamie's helped a lot in the past. Actually, the first production we did, How Sissy Grew, oddly enough, at the El Portal Theater. We did it there, not in the big space, but in the small space. Jamie was featured in that, along with his lovely wife, Erin O'Brien. And, no, he's very very involved. He wasn't involved in these auditions, but they were unusual and just sort of had me thinking about my own auditions and my good and bad auditions. And
Do you have one? Does one come to mind?
What a great segue. I had one audition that really sort of exemplifies humiliation. It wasn't even so much that it was humiliating. It was the topic. Because it was in Chicago. I was about 22 years old. And you do anything to get footage. You're trying to build a reel, anything to get footage. And it was, are you going to think I'm making this up? It was the role of a worm coming up out of an apple for an insecticide industrial. That's what I was doing. I was
a
worm.
How did you dress? Well, maybe we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that was the whole thing. I assumed that there was a worm costume, you know, that eventually there would have been a worm costume. And I tell you, Michael, imagine me, with this nose in a worm costume, it would be like the amputee cockatiel, you know. And so I'm at this audition, and I'm doing this worm coming up out of the apple, and I have to speak about how great this particular insecticide is. And I think the only thing more humiliating than having to audition for the role of a worm coming up out of an apple for an insecticide industrial is to then be directed as said worm, because apparently you don't know enough about the worm world to play it effectively. I'm standing up. It's in a boardroom, which made it even more humiliating. And I'm just standing at the end of this table. I start doing a little speech as the worm, and I lose my footing, and I start to fall forward, and I put my hand out because, you know, I don't want to land on my face, just self-preservation.
Right.
Casting director throws up her hands and go, and I quote, "Paul, worms don't have arms."
Oh.
And you don't really want to bark back at the casting director. Because what do you say then? "Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking about those South African juggling worms that I've heard tell of." What do you say? Worms don't have arms. "Oh, thank you. You have to take direction." So then I didn't get it. And that really is probably the low point of my audition life.
Is that woman still casting?
What?
Is that woman still casting?
I don't know. I shot her. No, I don't know. Aurelie and I were talking beforehand. My father is European, and he speaks with an Italian accent. And I got called in for an audition once to speak with an Italian accent. And I just do him. You know, I just do his accent, which is genuine, obviously. It's not, an Italian accent is not the Chef Boyardee, you know, spicy meatball. It's more genuine. So they brought me in to do this accent, so I did the accent, and apparently it wasn't broad enough for the director.
How does it go, though?
Well, when I speak as my father, it's just a little bit, you know, like a little roll, but not, you know, not too much, you know, just a little. And so I did the audition, and the director is just like, "Oh, Paul, great, great. Just one thing. The accent, we want something more severe. Something more. Do you ever see a top of the pizza box? There's a drawing of a gentleman with a large moustache and usually making a lip smack." I said, "Okay, first of all, you're asking me to sound like a drawing. That's the first thing. And I'm not going to do a greaseball Italian stereotype. I'm not going to do this. That's not how they speak." And he said, you think I'm asking you to do a stereotype?" I was like, "Be like the guy on the pizza box." Just like, and then of course the client chimes in, and the client's just like, oh no, I think Paul's got some valid points. So now of course I'm collectively hated by the director, because now I've pointed out that he's trying to push me in stereotype land in front of the client. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience. You have a good audition story.
Well, I do. I mean, there was a point in my life where I, you know, I sing, and I come from the musical theater, and that's where I kind of, it was an accident, I might say, but and I dance. None of these things I was trained in, by the way. But one thing came up in my career. I was about 18. I was 18 for sure. That's all right. And it was to audition for Anne Margaret's Las Vegas nightclub act. Mm. Now, you know who Anne Margaret is, Aurelian, right?
Not really.
Not really. Well, yeah. She's a phenomenal...
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Linda almost just did the spit take of the agents right there.
She's an iconic American performer, though. But
a wonderful actress,
how
wonderful
shall I
dancer,
say, we were of a different decade than the...
We were.
Than, okay. Yeah.
We were.
So
yes.
No reason that you should or would. No, okay.
You would matter of fact, the recent thing was the film Grumpy Old Men was the last feature of memorable. But I'm sorry.
Yes, no, not at all.
No, you would love her work, though.
Excuse
she's
me.
Amazing singer-dancer.
She was indeed, and she's also a lovely, lovely lady. Mm-hmm. And so I went in. Of course, I was very nervous to be, but fearless at the same time, to dance. And I had spent 3 or 4 days working out a routine for this audition with, and again, I'm 18, with this 16-year-old girl that lived down the street from me who happened to excel in tap dancing, right?
Now I know I really don't like where this is going.
Tap dancing, and what she did was she choreographed a routine for me to the music of, right off the album track of West Side Story, Dance at the Gym. You know that track. It's a very heavy dance number. But she tapped, she did it as a tap number. Now, of course, I knew that the tap was inappropriate, so I had to take the essence of what she was teaching me, and I had to kind of apply in my own mind what it would be like to put jazz into this and Broadway type of dancing, all kind of fused together. And I, in my mind, had accomplished this. And I went to the audition proudly and worked my tail off, you know, for these 3 days, and I took my record player, because the record had to play for me to be able to dance to. And they call my name, and I walk out into the middle of the floor, and I've got my record player in my hand, and I said, is there an outlet anywhere in the room? I'm saying this to a whole board of people, you know, the director, the choreographer, the musical director, everyone's there. And no one answered me. I said, is there an outlet in the room? You know, it's like saying, is the mic on here? Or no response. And then finally someone said, no, there's not. I said, really? And the musical director says, do you know Anchors Away? I said, Anchors Away, which is a big American kind of anthem, if you will. And I proceeded to do nothing but, he played Anchors Away, and what can you do to that? I can't do Dance at the Gym. I can't do that routine. So I simply did one kick after another. I mean, just up in the air, one kick after another. Mortified was I to do it, and I had to save face. I smiled all the way through. What else could I do?
Right. Sell it.
Yeah. Needless to say, I did not get the job.
I think part of it was the fact that you never put the record player down.
That's
they missed out. Michael.
Your kicks weren't high enough, I think.
You know, it's a sad state. I feel for anybody that does that. But I mean, I went on and I worked, you know, for a long time in that medium. When I really did learn to dance.
You did a number of productions of Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh,
right?
Was she
involved in any of the productions?
No,
that you did?
Only I would have been delighted.
Because I know you were Dick Van Dyke, Jerry Van Dyke,
Sherry Lewis, George Gobel, all those stars for years. I grew up in that show in particular. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
If anyone has any, we should talk about this down the road. If anyone has any nightmare audition stories, please do share them with us. Send it to stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. It's stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your stories. Maybe have you talk about them on the air. And also visit the website stateoftheartsla.com. But let's get to Linda, because we want to talk to her and don't want to lose any time in talking about the California International Theater Festival, which, Linda, you just kicked off this weekend, and you're saying it's been a lot of fun and just as opening any show is, probably a little taxing too.
It's thrilling, actually. It's been the work of a year. It takes about a year to build one of these. We're in our third season, and what we do is we bring in plays from around the world and present them lock, stock, and barrel. So the set, the crew, the actors come in and they perform for two, sometimes 3 days, and then they go home. So it's a very intensive visit, and the whole mission behind it really is for the betterment of cross-cultural understanding. When we first started this thing, we bring people over, and you hope that is as meaningful as you want it to be. But what we found is that when people come over and there's that visceral communication that happens in the theater arts, there's prejudicial walls dissolve to some degree. The other thing is that people coming here, oftentimes they feel they're coming to that outpost of Western civilization to perform here, and they leave with a very changed view, having been here and been with our audiences and broken bread together. A point in case, I would say, is this morning our wonderful, wonderful troupe of actors from Israel left, and lots of tears and hugs and lots of pledges of friendships. And tonight we have a show. It's actually the only film that we're showing, and it's a documentary on Pinter. This lovely man, Harry Burton, spent the last 15 years of Pinter's life working with him and became the only person ever to be permitted to film Pinter in process.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's screening his movie. It's a real must-see. And then as we progress into the week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we have our show from Ireland. They're actually being picked up at the airport right now, and they are Beckett specialists. So this is not a play of Beckett, but it is Beckett prose that's been worked into a play.
That's The End.
Mm-hmm, The End.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then a show on Thursday and Friday from Canada, from Newfoundland. And Newfoundland is an interesting place because it's where many of our planes had to land on 9/11, and then had to stay there.
That's
and
right.
they
All right.
were not, I mean, they were, the town was overwhelmed by the number of people, so they stayed, they ended up doing homestays, and, friendships and relationships have developed out of that. So we, in the States, obviously have a very strong bond to Newfoundland, and this is a company that specializes in stories from Newfoundland. They've traveled all over the world. This is their U.S. premiere, and it's a very dynamic, sharp edge, fast pace, design heavy show that is tells the story, true story of a young woman who hit the Newfoundland coast as a broken person, and that rugged coast, and she as a nurse herself ended up, as she was healing other people, she healed herself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sparkling design. It's a sparse design and a very physical theater. So that's Thursday.
And that's Tempting Providence,
Tempting
that one
Providence,
is called. Yeah.
Exactly.
Looking at the photos with it, it looks great. I'm curious, how are these pieces selected? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there like a committee, or do people actually go and see them in their country of origin, or how does it work?
Yes, I travel steerage and stay in hostels and go to a lot of festivals.
God bless you.
Great education. And when we first started this, it was about 5 years ago, and it was quite daunting, because you're going around the world. But then you find that it, as is the case with most theater communities, it's actually a fairly small community. And so if I missed a show in Moscow, I could see it in Bogota. If I missed a show in Poland, I could see it in Singapore. Mm-hmm. And then you start sort of seeing the same curators or the same artistic directors and actors. And then it's a question of building the season. So I'm just not smart enough to build a thematic season. So I choose a curated season that has a kind of buffet, something that's physical. That's sort of my delight, I think. I'm very intrigued by physical theater. I think it's the wave of theater. And some hard intellectual candy, something that's accessible for children or families, so that you can sort of come and hopefully sample, more than one of these plays and kind of start to get your finger on the pulse of what's happening in different corners of the globe through the theater arts.
And in and throughout all of this, you have someone like Michelle Lee, the Broadway star and television star.
Yes.
Michelle Lee coming in for her concert act, Catch the Light.
She is. We always like to have an American entry in the international lineup. So Michelle is the one for us this year.
And she's phenomenal. I mean, she's a wonderful, wonderful performer. I saw her do Seesaw.
Oh, yes. She originated.
On Broadway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The interesting thing, before it hit Broadway, and she, you know, she replaced Lainey Kazan, who was the original star.
I did not know that. I stand.
I saw Lainey do mm-hmm. it in Detroit on the night that Lainey was, in all due respect to you, Lainey, let go from the role, mm-hmm. and they felt she just was not ultimately right for
you're
the,
smooth,
for
Sterling.
The piece.
Gotta tell you, you're smooth, Sterling.
And Miss Lee was hired and went on to be nominated for a Tony for that role,
right, right.
and did a brilliant job. And she's remained her own special brand, you know, certainly throughout the years. So
yes, she has.
That's exciting.
New York Times describes her as many, many things. I mean, she had a review from the New York Times. It was just written by her fairy godmother. But one of the things they said of Michelle, I think, is very true, is that she goes to 0 to 60 and nothing flat. You know, she's a very dynamic
that.
Performer. So we're very
it
lucky
really
to
is
have
amazing
her.
To see just to see her on here and to look at this. I mean, we got the this. Promotional material for the International Theater Festival. And really, what you're talking about, this being a varied presentation, I mean, to have this documentary about Pinter, to have a piece, you know, a Beckett piece, to have Michelle Lee, there's this essence of China looks fascinating, this Beijing opera demystified, mm-hmm. The piece from Israel, Stones, the piece you mentioned from Newfoundland. It's just like, I you know, we get a lot of promotional material. I was an Ovation voter for years, so I used to get the seasonal flyers from the theaters. And they're all sort of, you know, thematically linked, or here's our season, and this. And this is just, this is more variation in from July 17th to July 25th that I've seen in collective theater seasons. And this is really, really fascinating. And
oh,
it's
thank
a,
you.
Well, you know what's also fascinating, Paul, about Linda is that here we're talking about what she's doing professionally as the theater festival director here for this wonderful event over the next couple of weeks. And here your career started in Japan. So talk about international.
Well,
right?
I think that's very much a part of the reason why I was led to do the festival. I did. My dad was in business there. My folks were always great admirers and of the theater. And so we had artists coming through the household always. Tennessee Williams lived with us for a while, and Helen Hayes, or you know, Harold Klerman, and
how many people
only
can say
because
that? Tennessee Williams lived with us for a while.
Yeah, oh my gosh, on purpose.
You know, it's funny. He had a. I'll just sidetrack for a second. He, as we know, he loved Chekhov, and my parents, being theater centric, their library was up to it, fortunately. So at night, sometimes we'd curl up on the sofa and with a couple of copies of Chekhov, and we would read. So I have the rare distinction of having read Irina to Tennessee's Masha.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That was terrible, but who cares?
Oh, that's
you know,
it, Linda.
It was,
beat the hell out of my worm story.
Yeah, really.
You know, it's fun. Speaking of Tennessee Williams, with this group that I'm doing the Steinbeck parody with, their first work was actually a wonderful parody of Tennessee Williams called The Glass Mendacity.
Oh,
and it was
wow.
a lot of fun. That was actually what got the Illegitimate Players known, was their first literary parody was the spoof of Tennessee Williams. But just the fact that you just reading Chekhov with Tennessee Williams,
that
man.
Was
and Harold Klerman, that had to be.
I was a little girl and took those experiences for granted, largely, as one does in the presumption of youth. But I think growing up in Japan, and I worked as a kid in the professional theater in Japan, and I know that it drew me into a kind of inner understanding of the Japanese culture in a way that I think many of my friends over there did not have that same privilege.
Right.
And so just experience firsthand of what the arts can do. They quicken the understanding process. They establish the common ground. They establish the common humanity. And I think especially now in a global reality and living as we do much of the time in a virtual reality, those visceral moments of understanding can be very sanguine and even important. You know, and none of us are going to change the world, but my hope is that somewhere along the line that, you know, a friendship will click, a seed will be planted, and that, you know, as everybody's lives goes on after having been at the festival, further good will come from it.
Well, and I hope it does. For everyone listening, you really have to make it out there to see one of these amazing pieces of theater, and we'll tell you how to do that in a little while from now.
They're all in Calabasas.
All in Calabasas.
There's a couple of different venues in Calabasas.
A gorgeous part of our San Fernando Valley area out there in the west part of the valley. But Linda, you're a Broadway star, and on top of that, of course, everyone knows you from your television experiences, and what sticks out in my mind most prominently is a TV Guide cover of you and Henry Winkler from Happy Days as announcing your relationship with him on the series Happy Days, that you were the great love of his life.
You know, that audition was sort of funny. I had done the first couple of seasons of Happy Days as Ron Howard's girlfriend, but then as the Fonzie character took off, they didn't really need to have supporting characters for Ron anymore, so that was me out of a job. Fade out, fade in. Many years later, my agent called, and they said, oh, they're looking for a fiancé for Fonzie, and they'd like to have... In the casting breakdown services, it said they wanted to have a Linda Pearl type. So I said, well, why don't I go in and audition for the Linda Pearl type and see if I can get it. So I auditioned with 500 others, and I ended up getting it.
How intuitive of that.
Oh, boy. I tell you, they can really be creative sometimes, can't they?
Well, thanks to Breakdown Services for putting that out there.
Yes, Breakdown Services, who's actually the sponsor of our show.
Oh, good.
I got to tell you, Linda, the thing that sticks out in my mind, because obviously I remember you from the Happy Days, but the one that stands out for me, because having one of my family members with a developmental disability was Like Normal People. That was the title, right? Like Normal People with Sean Cassidy. And it was so groundbreaking for the time and such a respectful portrayal of a disabled person. I remember it to this day like I saw it yesterday. And it was beautifully done.
It was a real privilege to do that.
And it wasn't being done then. I mean, it was a very difficult thing to present and be tasteful and giving disabled people the respect that they deserve. That was the thing that stood out. It was respectful. It honored them. Mm-hmm. It was not sort of like, oh, my wife's mother works with mentally handicapped adults in a work center, where she did until she retired, but doing assembly and things like that, and packaging and things like that. And we've helped out with the Special Olympics in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that is, I think because especially Down syndrome people, they're, for lack of a better word, they're cute. That you want to hug them, you want to embrace them, and a lot of times what she had pointed out is they end up getting very spoiled because they're so indulged, you know, because you just want to do for them. Right. And I just remember like Normal People like it was yesterday, and we're very, very grateful, and you really should be applauded for that.
Thank you so much. It was a great privilege to do, and we spent time with the real couple. They were with us a good deal of the time, as were his parents, and I'd stayed in touch with them, and many years after we did the film, I was doing, I don't know, someplace, and where they came to see it, we were visiting afterwards, and Virginia said, in her very unique voice, she said, God, I think I can draw it up. She said, you know, Roger turned 50. And then Roger said, yeah, I'm 50, but you know, I'm really only 5.
Oh, hello.
It was funny, but also very truthful.
Oh,
you know,
that's a melter.
Very sweet. Yeah. Well, thanks for remembering that. That was a real special.
No. You know, things just stick with you over the years, especially now that I'm 72. Things just stick with you.
And, you know, on top of all of her many talents, she happens to be a wonderful singer as well and has done theater, and she has her own nightclub act, and she also tours with Gregory Harrison in their concert together, A Night to Remember. But your show is called Come Rain or Come Shine.
Come Rain or Come Shine,
right.
Yes.
And you play all the great clubs across the country, do you?
It's so much fun. I sort of feel like it's an old-fashioned career in that sense, because I go out about once a month and do, you know, a couple of nights here and there. I'm a mother, and so it works with my being. It doesn't take me on the road for very long. But I've been able to go into wonderful townships that I wouldn't have had a chance to go into, beautiful theaters across America, and sing songs that I love to sing.
You know, well, hopefully you'll come to Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's, which is my nightclub in Studio City.
Wonderful.
What's that name again, Michael?
Yeah, it'll be Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's.
Yes. Oh, okay. Good.
We've been there for 4 years, and we've had great stars such as yourself on our stage. So anytime.
Before we forget, the California International Theater Festival.
Yes.
To get your tickets, call 800-351-2766. That's 800-351-2766. Or you can visit their website at www.citiffestival.org. That's citfestival.org. So thank you so much, Linda, for joining us.
Thank
Please stay
you very
with us
much
for the second half of our show. But, Michael, we should get to our arts calendar.
We should, our weekly arts calendar, which we take great pride in all the people that come to us with their shows that they're doing all across the country.
And I will kick it off this week. First of all, before I forget, I want to remind our listeners that we are brought to you because of Breakdown Services, a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And we're grateful to Breakdown Services, especially if you're looking for a Linda Pearl type.
That's right.
If you're looking for a Linda Pearl type, they're the first place to stop. On Thursday, July 22nd, Broadway actor, singer-songwriter Lena Rideout will team up with jewelry artist Marie St. Victor Coach for a special concert and jewelry exhibit to benefit Partners in Health, longtime advocate for Haiti. An acoustic jam of songs of inspiration and social change is also part of the evening, so bring an instrument or be prepared to sing along. The event is part of a live music acoustic series at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art, located in the heart of New York City.
Opening July 27th at Theater Row's Acorn Theater in New York, Abraham Lincoln's Big Gay Dance Party, a fourth-grade Christmas pageant in Lincoln's rural Illinois hometown, sets off a firestorm of controversy when it calls into question Honest Abe's sexuality. A thought-provoking, laugh-out-loud, funny, and uniquely American story unfolds, offering surprises at every turn. Each of the three acts lets the audience see the story from a different character's viewpoint, and at each performance, the audience decides in which order the acts are performed.
I read about this, Michael, and it just sounds like an absolute hoot. And I also happen to know that there's an actor involved in this named Ted Coach, who is a just wonderful, wonderful actor. So be sure to catch that one if you're in the New York area. Faith Hill has established herself as one of the music industry's top vocalists with a voice that is as powerful as it is recognizable. Her 15-year career has been highlighted by the sale of over 30 million records worldwide, during which time she has celebrated 13 number one singles and 20 number one videos. In fact, 1999's Breathe, 2002's Cry, and 2005's Fireflies all debuted consecutively at number one on Billboard's top pop album chart and country chart, making her the only female artist ever to accomplish this feat. Well, that is saying something. Don't miss her at the Orange County Fairgrounds Pacific Amphitheater in Costa Mesa, July 24th.
Chess, originally a concept album recorded in 1984, generated a number of hit singles before the theatrical version hit the West End in London in 1986, where it played for 3 years. The story has been streamlined and will feature some stellar principals, Broadway veterans, and the great energy of the Met Theater for 5 performances only beginning July 23rd. If you remember the hit songs One Night in Bangkok and Heaven Help My Heart, you're in for a very special presentation of the rock concert Chess.
Celebrate the founding of America in the Tony Award-winning 1776, where John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Ben Franklin fight for freedom and draft the Declaration of Independence, a riveting musical filled with history, humor, and romance, presented by Musical Theater West and playing through July 25th at the Richard and Karen Carpenter Performing Arts Center in Long Beach, one of my favorite musicals, 1776. I love that, and I was lucky enough to do it, too. Was Richard Henry Lee.
You were.
For further information about any productions and or events mentioned on today's State of the Arts Live calendar, visit us during the week ahead at stateoftheartsla.com.
And Paul, speaking of theater, of course, you and I both have something to review this week. You went down to the Mark Taper at the Music Center of Los Angeles to see a wonderful show called The Lieutenant of Inishmore.
The Lieutenant of Inishmore.
Yes.
I have to be very careful about discussing this because I don't want to give anything away about it. I mean, I think a lot of people know that it is a very unusual show, in fact, that in the respect that it's very graphic. unusually graphic, one of the most graphic things I've ever seen on stage, and to a lot of people, hysterically funny. I have to kick off this review by apologizing to two people, Fran Adams and Trudy Blair, great friends of mine, who saw the show and absolutely loved it. They really enjoyed the show. And I would probably say the night that I saw it, most people did enjoy it. It was a 70 to 80% of the people were just having a great time. For some reason, I did not connect with the show. I don't know why, because reading the description and everything about it, I really thought it would be my sense of humor. It's a very, very dark comedy. As much as of the premise as I can say is that he's a terrorist that's too extreme for the IRA, and his cat dies, and that is what sort of puts him over the edge to find out, you know, who killed his cat and all this. And I'm oversimplifying it tremendously, and I don't mean to disrespect the piece, but for me, I just found it to be a little bit one note. I found that the actors were wonderful, were doing their jobs beautifully as they were directed, but I just found it to be like, it was almost as though the cadence and the rhythm of the piece was very repetitious. It was sort of like they sort of had the way that they were delivering their lines. And granted, it's all very Irish brogue, you know, so it's a very distinct style of speech.
Right.
But, you know, there's really no other way to put it aside from the fact that I say quite simply, I didn't laugh as often as I like to laugh when I'm at a comedy. That's really what it boils down to.
It's a black comedy, of course.
Oh, and they don't come much blacker, I got to tell you.
And so you're saying basically that the actors rose above the material?
No, I mean, I think it wasn't even so much that. It's just that I think that there's definitely something there. It's a very successful show in New York. And
yes,
like I said, a lot of people are just howling. It just, for me, it really didn't connect. And it's the very definition of personal preference. I just, as I said, it's a very touchy thing to discuss because I don't want to even give examples of what I didn't care for, because a lot of people did care for it, and mm-hmm. I don't want to give anything away about, there's some twists and turns and there's some surprises, and I don't want to take that away from the people that are listening. So I guess I'm sure it's a very milquetoast review, and I'm very noncommittal about it, but I don't want to taint anything about it for people that are interested in seeing it, because like I said, I think I'm full well in the minority as far as not enjoying
it. Well, it just simply wasn't your cup of tea.
Wasn't
it? Obviously,
perfect way to put it.
A cup of tea for many other people who are flocking to see it, and
yeah.
And well, they should. And we love the Music Center of Los Angeles and bringing us a theater challenging as this particular piece was.
And that's at the Taper through August 8th. And the number for tickets there, 213-972-4400. Presented by Center Theater Group, I believe.
Center Theater Group, absolutely. And I, on the other hand, was in North Hollywood for the Saturday night performance of a spectacular show that is playing at the El Portal Theater, the legendary El Portal Theater. In NoHo, as we call it here out in the San Fernando Valley.
That's because they don't have any prostitutes there anymore. Did you
know
that?
Is that it?
That's why they call it that. NoHo's.
What if you said yes-ho? What would happen? What would happen, Paul?
I'm sorry. It's an ancient joke. It's such a cheap joke. I
apologize. We have WeHo.
I apologize to all the prostitutes in North Hollywood. That was a very crass comment.
The spectacular that I saw on Saturday evening is called Beyond, and we have with us today the star of that show. He is a soloist, an acrobat, aerialist. He is the director. He is the co-producer. He is a choreographer. He was born in France on the border of Switzerland. Please welcome Aurélien Roulin.
Bonjour.
Bonjour to you.
You do that so much better than me.
Well, I try. You know, listen, I do speak a little French. Did
really?
You know that?
No.
Did you know? You wouldn't know.
No,
that.
I
of course
know.
You didn't. When I worked at Disneyland as a kid.
When? Where? Here in the
States? Yes, in the States, in Los Angeles, in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. I used to be the fellow that took you on the jungle boat ride, right, around the river. And I spoke.
You're not speaking in euphemisms, are you?
No.
Okay.
No. And I would say everything in Spanish and French and English because I wanted to be just steps ahead of my colleagues here. Mm-hmm. And I would speak in those languages. So I'm going to test my French with you. I'll just give you a little bit of it. So I'd say, Monsieur et Madame, soyez les bienvenus, la jungle la plus célèbre du monde. Vous avez besoin d'une coupon et procès d'avertissement. Did you understand me?
Yes.
And was I right on pretty good?
Yeah, pretty good, yeah. I mean, you know.
That means the pizza is blue in December and I've got five yo-yos, right?
That's right. Something like that.
It's very generic. No, it's actually pretty good, yeah.
That's
good memory.
What did he say?
He said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the boat in the jungle where I'm here to give you a little bit of entertainment.
Right, and to tear your ticket, your e-coupon.
Oh,
it
okay.
Took a, yeah, so that was just a little taste. I said,
I'm
the
impressed.
Whole thing.
I'm impressed.
You better be
so
impressed.
So, tell us about your show. The history of it. How long is this the first performance of it in the States?
It is. Yeah, and actually, I feel very special because I'm here, and you know, if you want to say bad things, I'm here, so you better watch. But this is the world premiere of Beyond, and this has been like a little bit of a long journey. You know, I've been thinking about this project for quite a while. I started dancing at Disney, actually.
You did?
Yeah. I was 18 years old, and I moved to Paris with one suitcase, and my dad said, if you go, don't come beg for money, you know, just you're on your own. And I said, well, I'm legal, you know, legal age limit there is 18. So I got to Paris, and, you know, I had been dancing since I was six. My mom taught me how to ballroom dance and whatnot, and did acrobatics and gymnastics, and so I kind of had, like, this natural talent, and got to Paris, and I was like, what am I going to do? I don't know anybody, and so the audition for Disney came up, and it was the best experience. I mean, I was 18 years old, and there I was thrown into this world of Disney. I mean, it's like, it's a great experience.
Well, of course.
And one thing led to another, and then I auditioned for Moulin Rouge and got to work there, and then I got to work with companies, and one of them is called was called the Bird of Paradise. In translation, it's Les Oiseaux du Paradis. And they offered me to then tour with them over Europe and become doing more like musical cabaret style, you know.
Okay.
So I did that for a couple of years, and then at 20, I decided to come here, and I just like, two suitcases later, you know, I'm on the plane and I'm landing here, and
That was just 10 years ago,
yeah,
right?
It was like 11 years ago. It'd be 11 years tomorrow.
11 years tomorrow.
But yeah, and I got here, and you know, as an actress or as a singer or as you know someone that's in the arts business, you know, you when you love something so much, you know, you want to go to your limit, you want to push yourself, and. Right. To me, it was like, okay, there's no boundaries. It's going beyond, and so that word. It's been stuck in my head for a while, you know, and that's kind of how it came first. But
well, you know, I want to interrupt you for one second.
Yeah.
You said something to me the other night after the show backstage that you had you suffered a terrible accident, an automobile accident.
Yeah, in September.
Tell us about that, because it kind of put a big question mark in your future, didn't it?
You know, there's been a couple of interesting things. I think I've had I think we all go through this as a roller coaster, I call it in life, you know, where you experience certain things that makes you grow. And the first thing was that back in 2008 in November, the night before my sister's wedding, her 6.5-year-old daughter was diagnosed with lymphoma cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The night before. I mean, she literally came home on Friday afternoon.
My.
And next thing you know, the wedding is canceled, and she almost passed away within the night. So, you know, that was the first event. And then a year later, literally, I'm in a car accident, and I don't know how I survived, and I dislocated my shoulder, tore my labrum, and dancing and acrobatics been my life, and, you know, I go to do an MRI, and the doctor's looking at me, it's like, well, I think
there's something with your vertebrae as well?
And then I fractured two of my vertebrae in my cervical,
yes.
Yeah. And so, and, you know, they look at me, and they're like, well, I think you need to start looking for, you know, a different career, and I'm like, really? And so he said, well, we can do the surgery, and we can't really guarantee anything, and I'm like, well, I'll do it. And so back in November, then a year later, after my niece was diagnosed, and thankfully my niece is now okay, she recovered from chemotherapy, and she's doing really well.
God bless her.
I got into, surgery, and I just put everything on my side. I just said, you know, I'm going to do my PT well. I'm just going to focus on my health. I'm going to, you know, and I'm not going to let this, you know, say you can do it. It's like, you know, so I just had an amazing recovery. Even doctors are like, really? Like after 2 months, I could actually like do things that people take over a year to do.
Wow.
And so it just goes to show you, like, sometimes your mind and some, you know, can be pushed. And
and you were already driven. You were already driven to, and that it's almost like that event of that accident just made you
exactly.
even more committed.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you know the whole thing was the experience of my niece and growing. And so I just like, you know what, I want to do this show. It's been it was there for a while, and I just always been worried and scared about doing it, and I just said, you know what, let's go for it. So back in January, I started putting all of my ideas together, and, you know, with kind of a tribute of my life and what I've experienced as a dancer and acrobat and a bit of acting and whatnot. And so I just put it on a piece of paper and went to France in March and got in contact with the people that I danced for 12 years ago. And they're like, you know, we'll help you. We'll provide you some stuff. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, well, we'll give you the costumes. And I'm like, seriously? Like, and
it's not just any costumes.
Yeah.
These costumes are
handmade
from
costumes,
Paris.
And
they are no, they look spectacular. Yeah.
It's, and I was just like, why? And they're like, well, because we feel like you could be, you know, the legacy of what we've created, you know, 33 years ago. And I'm like, so one thing led after another, and I got in touch with the Art Portal Theater because back in 03 and 04 and 05, I was part of a play called The Ramayana, and it's an old Hindu myth, and we started there. And did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I was Indrajit, so I was
Wonderful.
One of the lead characters. We ended up going to New York, nominated for Drama Desk Awards. I mean, so the Art Portal for me was like kind of an institute of like, this is like a trampoline, you know, this is a launching of, you know, why not? And
right.
Get in touch with the management company, and it just turned out that they had a whole month open. I'm like, of course a whole month, you know, I'm going to do it. And so I got into that and got dancers. I mean, it went really quick. From April, that's when I signed the engagement there. April, May, June, I mean, 3 months to put choreographies together, get the music together, the costumes together, the dancers. And I mean, there's 17 performers, amazing talent. And there we were, you know, July 1st we opened. And
what a show it is. I mean, really, the beauty of this and seeing it so close up and personal as it is in that theater, I think is one of the special attractions to it. And I know the El Portal, if I'm not mistaken, also assisted you with perhaps sets? Was it?
Yeah, they did. You know, it's kind of one of those things when you do your own production for the first time, which I you know, did. It's like every little bit of help, you know, was just like a gift. And so this is like a tribute, and this is also just so much love and contribution from everybody. And I'm so blessed because
it sounds, you know, very collaborative.
Yeah.
It sounds like there were a lot of
everybody helped. And
it is
just,
indeed. And you know,
it actually sounds a lot like what Linda was describing, a very collaborative effort and with her festival.
It does take a village, I think, in the arts now more than ever, perhaps.
A great way to put it.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, aside from how he just described that collaborative effort, you know, the actual performances in this show, there are so many standout performances. Obviously, your performance is stunning.
Thank you.
I mean, your talent as an aerialist and in all of the things that you do in the show is very thrilling. It's thrilling for the audience. It's a great visual. I mean, it's dangerous.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, it's something you've never seen in L.A. You go to Vegas for this type of shows, and even in Vegas, it's different. You know, you've got Jubilee that's very musical, got Cirque.
But even in Vegas, I think one of the great things about what you described earlier is that even in Vegas, you're not going to see it with the intimacy that you have at the El Portal. I mean, the El Portal main room is a large room, but at the end of the day, it's only 350 seats.
Right. Yeah.
And he's flying out over the audience.
Yeah, the audience.
You know,
in
these amazing, beautiful scarves that he's twisted himself up in and unraveling and falling, you know, 12 feet.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, and we play with the audience, and that's what makes it so interesting. It's like you know, the audience can see the production and the whole effort from, like, so close, and it's just, it's moving to me. Right. And that was the whole thing about Beyond, and it's called dream from reality and from dream to reality, and it's what it is, you know. It's like pushing yourself, you know, and accomplishing what you want to do in life. And
well, you've done that in a beautiful way, and it's got two more weeks, ladies and gentlemen, for you to get over to the El Portal Theater to see the show, which I understand was hosted by ABC television star Gilles Marini
on the opening night.
And it plays Tuesdays through Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Sundays at 3 p.m.
matinee.
And El Portal, you can go right to their site and on the web, theelportaltheater.com, and pick up tickets that way and or call their box office. But I urge you to see it sooner than later. And again, it plays through August 1st. Thank you so much
for joining us, Linda. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Lovely to be here and lovely to meet Aurelian.
Please, very much. My pleasure as well.
And Michael, we got 1 minute left, and I believe you wanted to do a special shout out to somebody.
I did.
I think we have 1 minute to do it in, but
Thank
please
you.
Do.
I appreciate it. Because of Aurelian's young niece at 6 years old who battled the cancer. I was so touched when he told me this story, and I must say that after the performance, actually, in the lobby, there was a table set up with donations for, at his suggestion, to assist funding for this type of cancer. And audience members, including myself, were lined up dropping in the donations, which I thought was fantastic. There's a young man in my life by the name of Tyler Olson, who's 25 and has just recently been diagnosed with testicular cancer, and a client of mine of 26 years, Scott Hamilton, the great Olympic athlete and television commentator for figure skating, was diagnosed with testicular cancer some years ago and overcame it, and more recently overcame a brain tumor in 2004, and then just a month ago it reoccurred, and he's been through surgery again for it. But there is hope, Tyler Olson, for you out there, and I know that you're going through your chemo, and you've had some rough treatment with some very difficult operations at some of our county hospitals where you were unfortunately forced to go because of a lack of insurance. But we're thinking of you, and Scott Hamilton is going to be making a call to you in short order. So I hope you're listening. I hope you enjoy today's show, and stick around, folks, for us next week when, Paul, we have...
We have Marcia Wallace from the iconic hit television show Bob Newhart Show, and Louis Wilkenfeld, Artistic Director of Cabrillo Music Theater at California's Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. Thank you all. Thank you to both of our in-studio guests, and we will see you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.